Hello. Nice to see all sorts of familiar faces and new faces. Feel free to interrupt and start discussions. My agenda is pretty light for this afternoon. I hope that this starts more discussions, etc. Okay, so. Oh, the paper I want to talk about is this one. This is the header of the paper. And I want to tell you about how this work came about. And actually, these ideas were conceived in around 2011. I've never talked about them in public. So this is like my record of something. 2011 is the first time I talk about it to this audience. So that tells you about like how position-based cryptography, I guess, is evolving, or maybe it's telling about the number of babies I had in the meantime, or I don't know, something. It was posted on the archive 2015, and you could be like, okay, what happened in the meantime? What motivated you to post it? And thank you to Florian here present, who was in the know with this draft that was circulating and kind of built upon it. So then I was like, okay, well, now it's probably time for me to write that first version of the paper so that we can have that record and more people can build upon it. So maybe that could be the theme of today. And this is also my only paper, I think, that mentions position-based cryptography. We could also try to change that. So what was I thinking in 2011? I had to kind of go back. And I'm still kind of obsessed about things about related to delegating computation, cryptography, performing computations on encrypted data. And that started with blind quantum computation, 2009. 2011, I was still thinking about the experiment related to blind quantum computation that followed. Here's a picture, blind quantum computing type of thing. So Alice is quantum computationally restricted, maybe fully classical, or maybe just a little bit of quantum power. And then she interacts with a quantum server who's going to perform a computation for her. And then there's this blindness aspect of security or hiding the computation or maybe hiding the underlying data. So that's really kind of my mindset at that time. And then the blind quantum computing was developed in what's called the measurement-based model for quantum computation, which is one way to envisage how a computation can evolve. And then I was wanting to provide a circuit-based version of the same type of functionality. So how could we delegate a computation to the quantum server where you think about the computation as a circuit instead? So that gave me kind of insights on how to do that. And you'll see this appear throughout this presentation. So it's really linking position-based quantum position verification and delegating quantum computations. And in fact, in 2011, I gave this talk at qCrypt, which qCrypt 2011 was the very first qCrypt, and it was in Zurich. And that's where I kind of presented for the first time these ideas of computing on encrypted data. That work also took a couple years to eventually publish in its final form. At the time, I was a postdoc here, actually, well, University of Waterloo. Okay, speaking of inversions, mine is a time inversion. So most of the time in these slides, time's going to go from bottom to top. Harry's presentation was from top to bottom, I think, for these pictures. So thank you for the presentations this morning. I can build upon that. Now we're talking about instantaneous non-local quantum computation. On the left-hand side, we have a input state, and it undergoes this quantum channel C, and that gives you an output state. And the input spaces are AB, and the output spaces are A prime, B prime. In the instantaneous non-local quantum computation picture, we want to emulate this process. So that's what these equal signs mean, via a different physical setup where we have the input coming into A and B, which are separated processes. They might share some auxiliary state, like today we, this morning we talked about EPR pairs, and they have one round of simultaneous communication, which is this cross in the middle. Next, they have some extra processing, A2 and B2, and they each output a register in space A prime and B prime, and we want that to be row out just as the row out that's here at the beginning in the other, on the left-hand line diagram. So I think most of the time we drop this instantaneous word. We've taught, today we've heard about this in terms of non-local quantum computation. So we also know the link between this instantaneous non-local quantum computation and position-based verification. Namely, this is an attack. So these are parties that are trying to emulate as they, and pretend, that is pretend that they are at some central location C, which is what the honest party would do in the protocol. So if we have an instantaneous non-local quantum computation protocol, i.e. in this model, then we cannot, or we know that it's broken, and therefore this same channel C, the same row in distribution, as well as the row out verification being to check that the row out is correct, is not a secure QPP protocol. So that's why we are really interested in what's possible or what are the limitations in these types of computation scenarios.
Question about semantics.
Yes.
Why do you call it instantaneous if there's a round of communication?
So a round is actually a back and forth. Okay, so this is very short. This is one message from either party going whoop like that. And so usually that's not enough to do anything very useful. So I think that's why, I don't know, anybody else that maybe coined the phrase wants to speak up?
Okay. Well, I think it comes from Lev Weitman, who wrote about instantaneous non-local measurement, and he had some interpretation of, you know, the of measurement in quantum mechanics reason to ask about it. And I don't know, maybe you, was it you that changed the measurements to computation in your paper? I forgot who changed it from measurement to computation, but I think the instantaneous
versus measurement.
Non-local quantum part comes from Weitman's paper, yeah. I think, as far as I know.
Okay. Yeah, I also stumbled on non-local. Like, what's the non-local part? It's not like these non-local although my talk is going to go into non-local correlations, but I don't see the non-local correlation parts in here. Maybe like EPR, I don't know. Yeah. As we saw this morning in Harry's presentation, there are attacks, or there is possibilities, let's say in this instantaneous model, there are possibilities if we have exponential entanglement, then there's these teleportation, interesting teleportation tricks, including port-based teleportation, where it's possible to achieve this task for any channel C and any distribution of inputs rho in. So in principle, that means that quantum position-based verification is not going to be secure for adversaries that share exponential entanglement. And the first time I heard about port-based teleportation was also at QCRIPT 2011. And that this is the actual screenshot from the presentation was given by Robert Koenig on port-based teleportation, and I find it really amazing. It still blows my mind. Okay, so that's in principle, and how about in practice? That's where we want to look at today, and I think actually most of QPV now is, well, maybe in practice it's not possible to have adversaries that share exponential entanglement. This is a game we play a lot in cryptography. We're like, okay, well, things are computationally difficult, for instance. So that means that an adversary has a limitation, and we're willing to work with that. We'll show a reduction. We'll show that within this class of adversaries, there's no way to break the protocol. That's totally legit. So what if we postulate adversaries that do not share exponential entanglement. What if we say that this is a resource that we're not willing to give the adversaries? We think, and there's many valid reasons to say that, like, well, for exponential entanglement, it would seem like they would have to have exponential size quantum memory, and there's a lot of difficulty in building that. Even just having exponential amount of EPR pairs seems very difficult technologically. So there have been results in this direction, and I'm actually hoping to update my knowledge of the work that's been done. As far as I know, this is maybe the state of the art. Thomas Michel, Ferrer-Kanewski, and Vayner had a QPP protocol that secure against adversaries with at most linear entanglement. So we limit the adversaries that they can't have more than linear entanglement, and then we're able to show security. Okay, so that's encouraging. So we're in the idea of limiting entanglement and being able to show security. So this work is about that scenario. Yet we'll give the adversary some other resource. So the question is, could we have a secure QPV protocol that's secure against adversaries that are consistent with relativity, no superluminal communication? Okay, if we have superluminal communication, I think that all of QPV kind of falls apart. So that seems like a very reasonable assumption here, number one. What if we let the adversaries share correlations that are stronger than quantum correlations? So that would mean that we allow them to, they're not going to be able to communicate, but they can have these resources that allow to demonstrate some correlations, and I'm getting to shortly exactly which ones I'm talking about. And we will allow the parties to share polynomial entanglement. So we're not asking that. If they have exponential, we already know how to break it, or how to do instantaneous non-local quantum computation via these teleportation ideas. So this model is was addressed for the first time in this 2011 idea. Okay, so these non-local correlations that are beyond quantum, the story goes back to the CHSH game, where we have a referee, and we have questions. X is a single bit, Y is a single bit, and then Alice and Bob get those questions. They each answer a single bit as an answer, and then they win if the XOR of their answer is the multiplication of the inputs. So if you look at them as bits, it's a multiplication. You can also think of this x dot y, x times y as an AND gate. And we know from quantum mechanics, it's called Searle-Hills bound, that there's a maximal CHSH correlation that the parties can achieve. So if the questions are asked uniformly at random, they can win with probability at most cos square of pi by 8, which is about 85%. What if we postulate a abstract device that enables a distributed probability distribution between Alice and Bob? So there's an input X that Alice gives and an input Y that Bob gives. In the quantum mechanical case, this would be EPR pairs, and they would be doing measurements. Here we're saying, abstractly, suppose that this box has the following probability distribution. So if the AB output given the XY input, probability that you see one of these is uniform over the possibilities where the CHH correlation is satisfied. Okay, so this, called the Popescu-Rolish or PR box, sometimes also called the non-local box, is a resource that does not allow to communicate. So because these are uniformly random, the output bits of the box are independent of the input bit of the other party. Yet this is stronger than quantum mechanics because this box is going to win 100% at the CHSH game. And these boxes have been used to study like the fundamentals of quantum mechanics. Like how come quantum mechanics is only 85% non-local? Why is it not 100% non-local? So those are the types of questions that were kind of being discussed. Maybe leading up to 2011, but before then. So the main result is that we're going to have a way to do instantaneous non-local quantum computation So it's a possibility result for adversaries. So having only a linear amount of shared entanglement, so that's what we considered a feasible resource in this work anyways, as well as PR boxes. So they have this abstract correlation device. So together, this will be enough for this instantaneous non-local quantum computation. And that means that if you're looking for a QPV scheme, it's not going to be secure in this model. Any questions?
It's a linear number of uses of PR boxes.
Yes, it does end up being, it does end up being a linear, and I mean in the size of the computation, let's say. So the size of C, in a circuit representation of C, which will include the input size above, input size of the parties, the output size of the parties, and the number of gates in the circuit. Yeah.
What is the difference actually between the two requirements? Because PR boxes imply entanglement. What am I misunderstanding?
PR boxes are stronger than entanglement. Yes. So if we only have quantum mechanics.
Why do you need entanglement?
Oh, that's interesting, actually. You can't teleport a quantum state with a PR box.
But then classical information transfer too. But you cannot do this either, not with entanglement, right? Or do you mean no pod-based entanglement?
But teleportation.
So say, like, you couldn't replace a port-based teleportation scheme with only PR boxes or non-local boxes, because that's a classical correlation. It's not going to actually teleport the quantum state. You actually need an EPR pair to teleport.
Yeah, because you don't have superpositions.
Yeah, exactly.
In the EPR boxes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's only about the outcomes.
Yeah, we'll actually see that going on here. There's going to be this quantum part that's going to teleport, and that uses EPR pairs, and a classical part that's going to, like, do some side computation, and that uses non-local boxes. Yeah. Okay, so now I've added NLB here, which is going to be a resource in the computation. We have these auxiliary states, which we think about as EPR pairs. Also, we have these shared probability distributions. Okay, so here's what you might do at first, and actually this is not unique to the non-local box scenario. This is also what happened even historically. You may say, okay, well, attempt one, Bob will teleport his input to Alice, and then Alice does the computation. Teleportation is the circuit, as I remind you, because, look, when Bob, so this is the EPR pair, when Bob does this Bell basis measurement, he gets classical bits B and A, and then typically in teleportation, he'll send these classical bits B and A over to Alice, and then she will do these conditional corrections based on these polys, X and Z, and that will give her the reconstructed input psi. Okay, so in this picture, I have these this green A and B that's going from Bob to Alice. That'll be his message. Okay, of course, there's a problem with that. Okay, that's this yellow arrow. There's a problem with this because that's nice. Alice has all the quantum registers, and she can do the computation in the entire C, yet there's no more communication channel because it has to be instantaneous, only a single message, simultaneous message. There's no more communication channel for Alice to send the outcome back to Bob. So this doesn't work, and actually that's why we had all these interesting teleportation tricks where you can do the computation without actually sending this AB. That's also going to be our idea. Bob is going to teleport to Alice, his input, and he'll just, you know, not send A and B to Alice. Okay, so she doesn't know AB. What does she have? If she doesn't have AB, what does she have? Well, she has half of a maximally entangled state, namely this side of the register here. And here is where the cryptographer in me sees that, oh, half of a maximally entangled state is actually an encrypted quantum state. So we know something called the quantum one-time pad. And in order to encrypt a single qubit row, you choose two classical bits A and B randomly and apply this poly, X to the A, Z to the B, to the qubit that you want to encrypt. This is exactly the same operation as we have over here with the teleportation. So there's a really close link between having an encrypted state and having half of an EPR pair that is later used for teleportation. So that's what we're going to use. Alice is going to do the computation without knowing the teleportation corrections, A and B. Okay, now there are two parties. There's Alice and there's Bob. And this example is for a single qubit input for Alice and a single qubit input for Bob. Actually, that's all we're going to do today. Scaling it up to more qubits is really easy. I just wanted to simplify the notation. Okay, so how to look at this protocol now? I guess time goes from left to right. Although with entanglement, like time is kind of, you don't really know. Like sometimes you can play games of like moving around events in time. It's really useful. Anyway, so they have this row in, and then they have an EPR pair. And then Bob does this teleportation on his side so that he ends up teleporting his input over to Alice. So this wire actually becomes, the bottom wire is Bob's input that's teleported. Bob knows the teleportation key, AB. So the green is going to be Bob's knowledge of the key as we're going on. So I'm going to kind of interchangeably refer to like poly corrections, these exponents, and keys. They're all the same. And then Alice takes her input and she inputs it into the computation. Okay, so what's going on here is that we're going to have this constant that there's always going to be keys. Each of Alice and Bob have knowledge of a local value of the keys. And then if we XOR them, sorry, it's a little bit small. If we XOR each column, so if you take Alice's X key and Bob's X key on this wire, that would be the actual decryption key if you wanted to decrypt the output, for instance, or if you want to stop at that point and get the computation. At that stage of the computation, you would decrypt it with that XOR that's obtained. It's also called a distributed key because this XOR really distributes really nicely. It's in the parity. So the example of A and B that we had has Bob knows A, Alice sets the initial X key to 0, and the XOR will be A as expected. Same thing with B. So that's this distributed key that together, if Alice and Bob put their knowledge together, they would be able to reconstruct the actual key and decrypt at that point. The point is that they're going to stay separated until the very end. So, you know, we only have this simultaneous message, so we want to really reduce the amount of communication required in order to do this non-local computation. All keys are initially set to 0, except Bob has teleported his register, so he knows A, B. And now we're going to go into this concept of Alice performing the computation on encrypted data. We take C, which is a channel, we'll decompose it into a circuit and a universal gate set. And then each element of that circuit, or each gate of that circuit, goes into a kind of a gadget. And we're going to maintain this constant that Alice and Bob have has this distributed key as we're going along after each gate gadget. The universal gate set that we'll use has poly gates and Clifford group gates. The Clifford group gates are the they conjugate polys into poly operations. So that's really useful because it means that if you apply a Clifford gate on a wire that's encrypted with a poly, then it's just a matter of updating your knowledge of what poly was applied, and then it's as if you had done the Clifford gate on the unencrypted data. So that's what this represents. The X is really easy. So this means that Bob has this key, A prime, B prime, going into this X gate, and Alice has the A, B key. And then after the X gate, we simply apply it on the encrypted data, and then there's actually no key update required. The Hadamard, you know, HX equals ZH. So the Hadamard is going to swap the roles of the X and the Z key. So that's why now we have BA and B prime, A prime at the output. P has something similar, just slightly more complicated with the AX or B here on the Z key. And then C0 is a two-qubit gate, so there's extra symbols required here. This is pretty well known, except like what we have to do here is to do this distributed version. And the distributed version is distributed in the XOR, which is really fortunate because these key updates all have to do with XORs. because we're doing Clifford's. Okay, is there anything I could clarify here?
So at this stage, are you assuming that the gadget is a Clifford circuit?
Or? Right. Now we've done Clifford circuits. Yeah, so when we take the circuit C, decompose it, this is how you would do the gadgets for the Clifford circuits. The next one is going to be more complicated. Clifford circuits are not universal, famously. So we need to do an extra gate. And the typical one is the non-Clifford group gate T. It's also called piburate. So it has the property that if you apply T to an encrypted wire, single qubit encrypted wire, then this would be the correction that you would have to do in order to be able to conclude that you had applied T on the unencrypted data. And namely, there's this P to the A. This is not of the form X to the something, Z to the something. So you're kind of outside of this Pauli correction paradigm, so which is expected because otherwise T would be a Clifford gate. So the whole challenge is how are we going to get through this situation where there's a P to the A, where, you know, remember that there's this distributed encryption key. So and there, we don't want to communicate. So Alice and Bob, they have this distributed encryption key, namely the one corresponding to A. So it's actually A XOR A prime. And so how are we going to do that? And that's where, like, around 2011, I was like developing gadgets for a two-party computation, and not for like this distributed setting, but related gadgets. That's where this one came, was kind of actually super obvious to me, which is also why the note was a note for a long time. Alice has the input psi, and this is the distributed encryption key. She goes and does the T gate on that wire. And now, Bob, we're going to use an EPR pair. So this gadget is going to use a one entangled state. And she does this control knot, which is a little bit of a teleportation, but not quite. I'll get into that shortly. And then P to the A. And then she measures the top wire to get a classical bit C. And R out is going to be the output register. This is going to be taken as the output of this gadget. On Bob's side, he'll do this P to the A prime, where A prime is this distributed key here, a Hadamard, a measurement, and then that he gets a classical bit D. And then the claim is that this is the outcome of this gadget. I'm going to have a little bit of intuition of how we can get this. Recall that the yellow stuff is known by Alice, the green stuff is known by Bob. There's lots of XORs here, which are really nice because we can maintain this distributed key property. Except over here, there is AXORC. Okay, Alice knows this, but there's a multiplication with A prime where Bob knows A prime. So this, we're no longer in this nice XOR or linear type of key updates. And so the idea is to re-linearize, this is what this says, with a PR box or with a non-local box. So to use the correlations, of the non-local box to get classical bits that would go back into this nice form of having linear, just the XOR to combine them. Okay, and that's actually the PR box is custom made for that. So Alice will input A XOR C on her side, Bob inputs A prime, and then they're gonna get Z and Z prime respectively, where the parity of Z and Z prime is the multiplication of the inputs, which is the CHSH correlations. So the idea is to locally, each party inputs this into the non-local box, gets their output, and then this is their new key, a Z key for that register, and this is the Z prime key for also for the same register, and Z prime is from Bob's point of view. Okay, so that's actually, you know, how we've combined the quantum computation via these related things that look a little bit like teleportation, not quite, but they're related, with the classical key updates, which uses the PR boxes. So I told you we talk a little bit about correctness, and here you also see, you'll also see the link with teleportation. This circuit we already had on the previous slide. So why is this correct? We use these gate gadgets, actually, by Zhu Debbie here present and trying. Thank you for telling me about these a long time ago. And we have this input psi. And it's like a partial teleportation. And note that there's no EPR pairs here. We're using this auxiliary state plus, which is Hadamard on zero. And if you do this like partial teleportation with this control knot and a measurement here, it turns out that you're teleporting psi from the top to the bottom, or kind of reconstructing it up to this poly correction. It's only a partial poly correction, x to the c. And then we use this and add some gates. These diagonal gates commute with the control and kind of reuse the same algebra that we already knew from the x teleportation to be able to conclude something slightly more complicated, but still pretty obvious if you go step by step. And then substitute the input, which is no longer just psi, but it's actually the encrypted psi with a distributed encryption bit. And then you get some slightly complicated expression. You can simplify that, and I'll spare you the details. And then you get this this update as promised here. But then you might be like, well, the left-hand side has an EPR pair. There's no EPR pairs here. If you notice, actually, what Bob is doing on his side with taking the EPR pair and doing this P to the A Hadamard measure and D is the same thing as preparing this input state, this auxiliary input state, which relates us to the plus auxiliary input state in this X teleportation. So they're all related, and in order to understand this, we also play some sort of games in terms of the timing. Like this can be delayed to later, or it can be done ahead of time. If you do it ahead of time, you're preparing this auxiliary state. If you delay it, then you see this EPR pair coming up in this circuit. So at the end, there's going to be a final round. So far, there's been no exchanges of messages. So we've managed via the PR box to really like actually do this distributed computation where the key is distributed in the XOR. Now we need to send the outcome. So Alice has done it all kind of virtually using this encryption method. And now she will send Bob his output via teleportation. Teleportation is going to create new poly keys. That's okay, and it's all in the parity, so she can update her keys. And now we have classical keys. We can copy classical keys, so they will simultaneously share them. Then each party can compute the decryption key and locally decrypt their register in order to get this row out that we're looking for. That's the idea of this instantaneous non-local quantum computation. Note that we've used one PR box per T-gate. So it's the T-gate gadget that has this distributed multiplication that we need to use for which we use the PR box. How many EPR pairs have we used? We've used EPR pairs to teleport Bob's input to Alice. We'll call it I. T will be the number of T-gates in the circuit. Each T-gate has a EPR pair. And O will be the number of qubits that Bob needs for his output. And we also use EPR pairs for that. So that's linear in the problem size. And so as we, via the link, the well-known link with QPV, it means that a party with these resources will also break quantum position verification. So a little bit of a philosophical note on that. If we manage to show these QPV protocols that are secure against efficient quantum adversaries, so that are secure even against adversaries with polynomial number of entanglement, it's going to be because quantum mechanics is not maximally non-local. Okay? Because if quantum mechanics is maximally non-local, we have PR boxes, and then this result applies. So I find that kind of curious to think that the fact that quantum mechanics is not maximally non-local might be the reason why we can have secure position-based verification. Open questions directly following this line of thought. would be, well, what about noisy non-local boxes? And in the calculations that I did, namely this one here that showed up on the screen, we imagine that this is always satisfied perfectly. There's an entire line of research looking at noisy non-local boxes. Super interesting, and it's like, well, what if, it's related to what's called the collapse of communication complexity, which are also ideas that are kind of percolating through this work, by the way. And collapse of communication complexity is considered to be a implausible effect. So we kind of think that that's not something that's consistent with the current physical theories. So it was shown in very early work that with PR boxes, we actually have this collapse of communication complexity, which is further evidence that these PR boxes don't exist in nature. And then questions arose such as, well, what if we have noisy non-local PR boxes that, well, if they go to cosquare pi over 8, like the maximal Tsereltsen's bound, then we know that we do not have, like, quantum mechanics does not lead to a communication complexity collapse. So the question is, just how noisy could the PR boxes be? And currently the best known, as far as I know, is about 91%. So if the boxes are 91% noisy, we still have the communication complexity collapse. So this is a related question. How about noisy non-local PR boxes? Would we still have instantaneous non-local quantum computation, as in the results that we talked about just a few minutes ago? As far as I know, the work that I presented doesn't address that question. Sorry about the typo. Since I have your attention, I also want to bring up some potential opportunities that I think could be really interesting for the QPV community, and I hope we can discuss this week. It's in this, okay, following this idea that we have this realm of adversaries that we're willing to say are practical adversaries, and we want to show security against those ones. So what about other types of adversaries? So what about computational assumptions? And I was chatting with Alex actually last week, and we agreed that this seems like a unexplored area that could be quite fertile. So far we've talked about statistically secure QPV protocols. Now, it's very common in cryptography to assume computational assumptions, whether you're like, oh, okay, difficulty of factoring, difficulty of LWE, one-way functions, et cetera. So it seems reasonable that we would allow ourselves these computational assumptions for QPV, and that could give us new tools so that we can maybe prove lower bounds, et cetera. So examples would be one-way functions, pseudorandom quantum states, which have actually been related lately to this ADS-CFT stuff, if I'm not mistaken. So that, and they're kind of very popular in crypto right now, so maybe also for QPV. And what was this supposed to be? Okay, so then some other models that have come up in cryptography are things like noisy quantum storage. So what if you have like noise on your EPR pairs? Could we be able to show security of protocols for that? What about modeling the adversary having low depth? Limited circuit architecture. And this is getting towards like current day quantum computers, or the short term, actually there's a name for this, noisy intermediate scale quantum computation, also called NISQ. So there's different models for what these short-term available quantum computers would be. So that could be a model for our adversaries and to maybe find a QPV protocol. I'd like to thank you for your attention.
I mean, you presented that sort of like you need one PR box per T gate, right?
Yes.
So if you have, I mean, if you're lacking, say, one PR box, do you know if then the best attack that you can do is just not use the PR box and just do the teleportation attack? Or can those still help if they're not enough of them?
Say that slower.
I mean, if you have sort of like, I mean, you have 5 T gates, but I only give you 4 PR boxes. Do you know that then the best attack is like not using any PR boxes?
Oh no, no idea. Okay, so like a fine grain type of like, oh, you know, like trade offs between number of PR boxes and winning probability. And there's so many possibilities there. Yeah.
No idea.
I have no idea. Yeah. Yeah.
So I touched this morning on this circuit idea of thinking of proven as a collection of provers, and small circuit, and Kabir's no-go result showing those can be simulated. Do you have any intuition about whether you could efficiently simulate them using PR boxes? Does anybody know? Has anybody thought about this?
Do you have at least one message, like kind of one simultaneous message going on? Model. Yeah, I mean, if there's no, like, PR boxes, they're not going to do.
I guess we have to assume no superluminal signaling, but possession of PR boxes.
Okay.
How much easier that is to simulation?
I don't know. It's a good question. Yeah.
So how could I think about your protocol there if I look at like a magic state model of computation?
Comparing
T states, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Can you kind of work through that and do the same thing?
Yeah, my secret is all the same thing. Okay, but you know, you need to really like look at it through the right lens. And so the question for those who, I don't know if everybody heard it, it's like, what's the link between fault-tolerant quantum computation and magic magic states? Then you do kind of like this. Actually, the T gate, like proof that the T gate auxiliary state works, is very close to this X teleportation. Maybe they even do that in that paper. So if you had, okay, so one thing could have maybe, okay, a big difference in the magic state is that the T is on the auxiliary state. Here, Alice does the T. We could push it down. Well, you could probably push it down. Just for this case, this is not a bottleneck, okay, so it's fine for Alice to do it. If you had the T on here, I think it would also kind of commute with the control. I think it would be fine. And yeah, it's very similar.
I guess my question is, does the magic states you use, so as your Ancilla, would that would need to somehow depend on the inputs, the A and B inputs?
Miraculously, it's as if here this P to the A and P to the A prime, they combine and they work together over this EPR to kind of come together and look. A and A prime is exactly this P correction that you need to do, which is P to the A. So it's, okay, I'll stay on this slide because it has it bigger. So, and it has this thing. So this gadget is allowing a remote P to the A prime correction that Bob can do on Alice's side, because you can kind of commute this over the EPR pair and even commute it through here. So they end up adding together. And then P to A plus A prime, and then they miraculously convert to poly X corrections because of this thing. Because if you do another P to the A, it becomes Z to the A. I don't know if that's what you're looking for.
No, I believe it's a lot of miracles.
So very, very. Nice talk. I was wondering, have you used an EPR pair for each T-gate?
Yeah.
Have you thought about whether you need it, whether you can somehow use the PR box to avoid that?
Well, it seems difficult for the reason that you can't teleport with a PR box. So the computation itself still needs to happen. And so, like, this P to the A prime can't be, like, it needs to kind of act on the quantum register, but it's only, in this paradigm anyways, it doesn't mean that there's no other way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if I may add, how do you do this experiment? Yeah.
Yeah. What do we do experimentally PR box?
Yeah.
Actually, there was one proposal with rubber bands. You can kind of like a rubber band, and each party pulls on it. One gets a longer end or something, and that does a multiplication or something. I don't know. What do you think? Could you just have a classical process on the side that does that? I don't know what it would actually prove, though. Yeah.
Firstly, are you complaining that if people perform this experiment by simulating the PR box with communication, that's not right, right?
No, I'm just thinking whether it can be actually done, really without...
But this is outside of quantum mechanics, how can
I know,
it
I know, that's why, I mean, it's
right.
Just
yeah, I mean, the only thing that comes to mind is what Debbie's saying. You simulate it classically to at least show that...
Because the thought to look for things to be able to replace in nature.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, I don't know, how would you formulate a principle like... I mean, could you formulate a principle like, you know, we know that PR boxes cannot exist because we think communication complexity should be non-trivial. Would the principle that comes out of here be like equivalent to that, or you think it's kind of incomparable? Could we formulate a new quantum principle?
So do we believe that QPV exists?
Yes, QPV should exist, and therefore
right.
PR boxes don't.
And therefore PR boxes don't. Yeah. Yep, that's what you wanted me to say, right?
Yes, or
I mean,
I don't know.
You knew it, you knew the answer.
Nice precise formulation.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that.
Do we believe any of these principles? I mean, does nature actually care about the complexity of anything? It doesn't.
Well, these holography things, it's all about complexity. I don't know.
I think they're good now.
Okay, thank you.